south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Okay, then, let's start with a little email. This one's from Scott. He says, Johnny, hope all is well with you. Enjoying the show? Have some questions about your recent Spain trip. First, did you personally change your own pronunciations and verb connotations to the Spanish version from the Latin version? Second, what do you think about Spain for expats? I'm seriously considering it for a while as a base to get to know Europe. I know it'll cost more than Latin America, but later I will be heading to Latin America. All the best, Scott. Well, I think it was on last week's show I mentioned a bit about Spain. What I didn't mention was that Spain has its own dialects too, just like Latin America, just like United States and Canada for that matter. When you really, really know a language, you can generally tell the part of the country that a person comes from. That's why every born and bred American can generally pick out a guy from Texas, New York, or Jersey. So if you happen to be in Barcelona, Spain, for example, like I was last week, they do have a particular dialect, even a particular way with words, as you see them written. Now, no matter how many dialects they have in Spain, or accents, whatever you want to call them, or even separate languages, like, for example, Basque, the people in Spain consider their version of Spanish the high, so-called superior version. That is the correct and proper version, and everyone else's version of Spanish, that means all of Latin America, they consider common, lower, bastardized versions of Spanish. And you know, it's really the same thing with England, for example. They consider their version of English the high version, the proper version, and it is, compared to the rustic folks that still live in the colonies, that is. Even though in England they have a lot of crazy dialects too, like, for example, Cockney, which higher class people in London, for example, from Mayfair, consider low class, even so, the English consider Cockney to be far superior than American English. And you can't really blame the Brits. After all, it is the mother country, right? Home of Shakespeare, Shaw, and even Ian Fleming. And funny enough, last week when I was in Spain, and of course I spoke my version of Spanish to them, the local Spaniards would ask me, where are you from? And I'd say, guess. And they'd always say, yeah, well, you look like a gringo, but you sound like you're from Colombia. Now, my Spanish is okay, but my conjugations and my past presents and futures, etc., are not as fluent as a native speaker. And in no way could I instantly convert my Latin American Spanish to the proper kind of nasally upper-class Spanish they speak in, let's say, Barcelona. I'm just not that lingually adaptive. I freely admit I'm kind of a language blockhead. And if you remember, it took me a couple of years to get together enough kitchen Spanish to figure out what my cleaning lady was talking about. But with time, you do pick that stuff up. I just plod along the best I can in my Latin American Spanish, which I guess sounds a lot like Colombian Spanish, to them anyway. I've heard native speakers say that 100 times. Now, that's totally fine with me. Just don't say my Spanish sounds like Mexican Spanish, please. Why? Because I found out while in Spain, real European Spaniards just gag at the thought of cantinas, men with glittery, spangly outfits and gigantic sombreros, and seemingly drunk and out-of-tune mariachi bands. They disdain all those so-called low-class Mexican traditions. Spaniards look at those pot-bellied Mexican guys in spangly outfits with dingle balls on their gigantic sombreros as a big joke, a bunch of bozos. In fact, in Spain, I noticed a very conspicuous absence of Mexican restaurants. I saw not one single Taco Bell nor a Taco Bell commercial on TV. Oh, they've got their McDonald's and their Kentucky Fried Chickens, all right. But Mexican restaurants? Nope. Oh, and speaking of Mexico, people still send me the occasional email justifying their lifestyle or a little piece of turf they're living on in Mexico. They tell me they've found their little safe enclave that's far enough away, they say, from narcos, crime, and murder. And that's all good and well and fine. That's what we're all looking for, right? Except, you know, we're talking about Mexico, that means you don't want to leave your little patch of tranquility too often. Because, except for parts of the Yucatan, and those well-guarded, first-world expensive exclusive neighborhoods that are pretty much a staple for the wealthy in all Latin cities, and of course the usual tourist spots like Cancun and Playa del Carmen. The fact is, if you're going to live in Mexico, it really is the Wild West and you better have a gun. But wait a minute, guns for the average man are outlawed in Mexico. That makes sense. One of the murder capitals of the world, and they don't let the public have guns. I'm serious. Now, I know news stories about killings in Mexico are becoming old hat, and you're probably callous to them, but the latest one that took place last week is kind of a shocker. 43 people killed in a three-hour shootout right outside of Guadalajara. Very near a popular gringo tourist destination, way too close for comfort. So all you folks who are stuck in Mexico because you've got an investment there or whatever, please stop trying to convince me that your little enclave is totally okay. I'm sure it is. And of course, if you've got first world dough, you can live in a well-protected first world gated community too. But what happens once you wander outside the gates of the neighborhood? Come on, be realistic. How safe do you really feel? Now, if I was invested in Mexico and I had a condo in a high-rise tower or whatever, I'd be trying to rationalize why I live there too. The thing is, even if you found your little peaceful enclave, you know that soon enough when the next big first world crisis comes and it sweeps down to Latin America, things are going to get much worse everywhere. So you might be able to poke your head out the window and even take a walk down to the nearest big Mexican mall. But a year from now, I wouldn't bet on it. Now Scott in his email also asked about living for a while in Spain, learning the culture and the language, etc., and then moving to Latin America. Well, you know I'm all for that, but you're going to have first world dough. Now, Scott, of course, mentions it is more expensive than Latin America. Well, I'll tell you, it's not just more expensive than Latin America. It's a hell of a lot more expensive than Latin America. For example, in any big Latin city like Madrid or Barcelona, if you take a trip on the underground, the metro, the train, locally, you're going to pay about $1.25 to $1.50 for a one-way trip. And that's if you buy an economy pass, which I think is called a T10 pass. Pay 10 euros for that, which is like 13 bucks, and you get 10 trips. Otherwise, if you just take an individual trip on the metro or a bus or a train locally, you'll pay about 2 bucks for a one-way trip. Now, down in Latin America, whether it's a big city or a small city, whether you're taking the metro or a municipal bus, for example, like in Rio or Medellin or Panama City or Sao Paulo, you're going to pay about 20 to 25 cents for a one-way trip locally, which is about a sixth to an eighth of the cost of traveling around in a big city in Spain. And as far as eating out, in Latin America, you could easily get by on 25 bucks a day. Whereas in Spain, for the same kind of meals, you're going to pay 4 times as much or more. And it's true with all that unemployment in Spain now, 30% of the adult population, and the economy in the crapper, real estate prices and rentals have come way down. For example, I checked a lot of listings, and you can get a nice apartment for around 600 to maybe 1,000 bucks a month. But as it turns out, that's still way too expensive for the locals. Even though Spain's considered first world, and therefore should have first world salaries, in talking to a few cab drivers and cooks and waitresses, etc., the common people, they tell me now that the average unskilled person makes around 800 to 1,000 euros a month. That's around 1,000 to maybe $1,300 a month US, which means the average Spaniard cannot afford to buy a house or a car. That's why right now some of the Spanish TV reality shows focus on young adult Spanish men and Spanish women sharing rent and apartment space. For example, there's one show about three 20-something Spanish guys, their trials and tribulations renting an apartment, and there's another sort of companion show showing three 20-something Spanish women sharing apartment space and their trials and tribulations. And those two shows, as it turns out, have super high ratings because so many young Spaniards are in that position. As it turns out, unlike young adults in Latin America who live with the folks forever, even when they're married, young adults in first world Spain are like young adults in the States. They want to get the hell out of the house by the time they're 20. Most of them anyway, though I know a lot of them get stuck at home, maybe forever. Mostly because the employment prospects are so dismal. So, for gringos and expats, if you're going to Spain, you can get in a house or apartment very inexpensively. You'll pay probably half of what it was 2 years ago, but almost everything else is first world expensive. Oh, and one more comment about the transportation thing. The trains, the buses, the undergrounds, and the metros are in much, much better, in fact, sometimes infinitely better condition than their counterparts in Latin America. So if, for example, you're riding a bus in Managua, Nicaragua, I bet after looking at the condition of the seats, you really don't want to sit down. In fact, you probably want to avoid touching too many things too. So in Latin America, it might be 25 cents a ride, but I assure you, there'll be no pleasure in it. Now, as expat Eddie always says, he'd ride the chicken bus if it was an emergency, but he wouldn't sit on a seat if he was wearing your pants. Sort of a funny statement coming from expat Eddie, a guy who rode the chicken bus practically every day the first few years he was down here. Which begs the question, could fame and fortune have tainted expat Eddie too? Well, maybe a teensy bit, but not much. He still buys those cheap, stinky-ass Belmont cigarettes for $1.50 a pack. And speaking of expat Eddie, here's another crazy chapter out of his life. Recently, I was at expat Eddie's house in his little gated community in San Salvador. We were just catching up on things because I haven't seen him in about 6 months. Now, you longtime listeners probably know the last time I mentioned an expat Eddie story, I was on the outs with his girlfriend because I made a few negative comments to Eddie about her SUV and how ridiculous it is to have one of those things down here. In fact, she can barely maneuver and park the big-ass thing. But no matter, for Latins, it's all about the show, and it's even better if you have a driver. So, naturally, he ended up hiring one because she can't even back the thing up. Much less parallel park. That would have been impossible for her. And I know Eddie paid for one of those private driving schools for her. And she went down to the driver's testing station and passed and all that. But as it turns out, she readily admits, even the driver's school never made her parallel park, and at the driver's testing station, they don't even make you parallel park. Some test, huh? Though it should be mentioned, all girls in short dresses pass their driver's test down here. Why? Because all the tests are given by men. Surprise, surprise, huh? This is Latin America. Oh, and by the way, if you go way back in my past shows, you'll hear me talk about the fact that you can buy your driver's license down here without any kind of test at all. In fact, nearly all driver's schools promise you that they guarantee you a license when you finish. You don't even have to go down to the driver's testing station. When your lessons are finished, magically a driver's license appears. And here we all thought Latin Americans were inefficient and on mañana time. Now note, in countries that are loaded with gringo tourism like Panama and Costa Rica, governments have tightened up on those driver's license requirements because they know gringos have no trouble forking out the dough for a license. Latin governments know that gringos are known for obeying the law and following orders, so they almost always get their licenses the legal way, which turns out to be a nice big cash cow for places like Costa Rica where they charge gringos extra for the privilege. So anyway, sitting in expat Eddie's living room, facing down his fiancée, who 6 months ago wanted nothing to do with me, luckily it seems to be a common theme that Latins don't hold grudges long. Isn't that nice? Which is why, and I've seen this for myself, Latin guys can cheat on their wives and girlfriends, get caught, then a couple of days later they're lovey-dovey and having a date at a restaurant. And you know, the first couple times you see that happen, it's kind of baffling, but this is macho Latin America, you know, which dovetails nicely into this expat Eddie story. As we were sitting around in Eddie's living room, Eddie's girlfriend, who was once again genuinely nice to me, asked me if I was still looking for a new cleaning lady, or if I knew any other gringos who needed some domestic help. To which I said, no, I don't need one right now, but I often run into gringos who do. Then she called out the name, I think it was Ingrid, and a little girl in a maid's outfit ran out from the kitchen. I mean, she was little, maybe 80 pounds and 14 years old. Now note that down here in Latin America, it's not unusual for 14, 13, even 12-year-old kids to be working, actually somewhat legally. Of course, this is Latin America, so in the big cities especially, there are tons of kids on the streets, washing car windshields for pennies. There's kid fire breathers, human statues, kid candy and pirated CD sellers too. Mostly on big street corners in crummy sections of town. Yeah, sure, there are child labor laws and kids are supposed to go to school, but there's really no such thing as a truant officer down here, so go figure. Like I said, Latin countries have all the first world laws, but none of the enforcement. Anyway, the thing is, you can, under certain circumstances, hire underage kids, though I don't recommend it. Even with a 14-year-old kid, if you could get her parents to sign a piece of paper saying they give her permission to work, well, she can work, and it's legal. Anyway, in this case, I said to Eddie's girlfriend, isn't she your maid? She said, not quite. Her mother's our maid. She's been our maid a long time, and that's her daughter. We don't really need two maids in the house, so she's just working here for a while till we can find her something else. She's a good girl, but the problem is, she doesn't want to go to school. She keeps running away. She wants to work. And Eddie never hires young girls like that to work at his restaurants because sometimes they get out at 2 in the morning. And being that his restaurants are in the big city, for young girls at night like that, it's a problem. So then I said, well, what's the story? What's she doing in your house if you really don't need her? Then Eddie's girlfriend said, well, it's a long story. The girl's dad, her maid's husband, he's kind of an abusive weekend alcoholic and, well, he occasionally beats on his wife and his daughter. So just recently, the mother and daughter left the house and now they're living in the maid's quarters here. Of course, that's what the maid's quarters is for, but it's only for the maid. One person. Then I got the whole story out of her. A sad little tale that's pretty common down here. Now, don't laugh or get shocked when you hear this, but it's 100% true. And not at all out of the ordinary for the lower middle classes in Latin America, who make up about 50%, sometimes more, of the 500 million people living down here. Now, as you probably well know, Latins are very superstitious. And the lower class, least educated people are the most superstitious. Anyway, as it turns out, her mother, Eddie's maid, knew that her husband, who she'd been married to for 20-some years, was cheating on her, and she knew this for a long, long time. Especially when he came home drunk, smelling of perfume and worse. And when she'd confront him with it, he'd just get abusive and smack her around. So she just did what any self-respecting, lower-class Latin American woman would do in that situation. She went to the local neighborhood witch. They're called brujas down here. Bruja. As it turns out, basically, every middle and lower middle class Latin neighborhood has one of these brujas, kind of a fortune teller, who can also cast little spells and mix potions. Totally ludicrous, I know, but it is what it is. Down here, you see, there's always been a weird mix of Christianity and paganism, including a lot of indigenous rituals that go way back before Columbus. So anyway, the cleaning lady went to the local bruja, who charges like $10 to hear your case. So she forked over $10. And according to the cleaning lady, the bruja knew the whole story before she even opened her mouth. She said, I know, your husband's cheating on you. And you want to know how to cure him of that. Yeah, right. Big shocking revelation. A Latin American guy cheats on his wife. Then the witch said, I'll tell you something else. He's not just cheating on you with one woman. He's cheating with four. And then after some chanting and some incense burning and some mixing of herbs and spices, the bruja went into her kitchen and came out with a little plastic Ziploc bag. Yep, a Ziploc bag. I guess that's part of the modern day witch kit. And in that bag, get this, she had a brown egg and a stick that was about a 1/2 foot long and carved crudely in the shape of a penis. And here's what the bruja told her to do. She said, take a pair of your red panties, they have to be red, wrap them in this little wooden penis. Then stuff it under your bed mattress on the side your husband sleeps. So what was that all about? It was supposed to take all the desire her husband had and concentrate it on her, his wife, so that now he would only have passion for her. I mean, come on, you can't make this stuff up, right? Then she took an egg out of the Ziploc bag and said, next time he comes home drunk and he falls asleep in bed, you take this egg, slowly and gently rub it all around his body. But don't break it. That would negate the whole spell. And what was that for? Well, the bruja said the egg would suck up all the bad sexual energy and desire out of this guy, and what remained would be the good passion that he had for his wife. Then she said the most important part of the whole procedure, when she was done rubbing the egg all over him, she was to quickly, within the hour, run to the nearest river or body of water and throw the egg as far as she could, which was supposed to disperse all that bad energy that was now concentrated in the egg. Now, as it turned out, she succeeded in placing the underwear and little stick on his side of the bed under the mattress. Then, the next time he came home drunk, she did the egg thing, and unfortunately for her, he wasn't that drunk, and he grabbed her, and the egg broke all over him. Then, according to her, he started wailing on her again and made her fess up to what she was doing. And when she explained about the bruja, He just blew his top and really laid into her. Then, a couple of days later, when everything calmed down, she went back to the bruja and told her the story. Only this time, she brought her 14-year-old daughter with her. And the bruja, seeing the 14-year-old daughter, said to the lady, "You'd better get your daughter out of the house as soon as you can because he's doing bad things to her, too." Now, the other part of the story is that she's got three other kids, a boy and two other daughters in their 20s, and they've been out of the house for quite a while. And by the way, the bruja said her drunken, abusive husband was also playing around with the other two daughters when they were in the house, too. Okay, now hearing that much of the story, I said to Eddie's girlfriend, "You really believe all that, what the bruja said?" Then Eddie's girlfriend nodded and said, "Her maid knew all of that was going on. She knew her husband would get drunk and occasionally creep into the room of her other daughters. That's why she said they got married so young, one at 15 and one at 16, to get out of the house and away from the old man." But the story's not finished yet. Turns out the bruja told the cleaning lady that there is one way to cure her husband of all that. She said he'd have to call a family meeting of all his brothers and sisters and his mother and father, and he'd have to go around the room one by one, hold the hands of each of his family members, confessing and naming each of the four ladies that he was screwing around with and that he had abused his own daughters. In other words, ask every single member of his family's personal forgiveness. Then, the bruja said, all the bad vibes and spirits will have drained out of him, and after that, he could begin as a new man. That said, the cleaning lady had a powwow with her husband and said she was going to leave him and take her 14-year-old daughter unless he agreed to spill it all in front of his family members, which was the bruja's prescription for success. But you see, it's such a macho society down here. No man would ever submit himself to that kind of embarrassment and ridicule in front of his family. So he just laughed at her and told her she was nuts. Then she said, "When you come home tonight, we'll be gone." Then he laughed and said, "Yeah, you've said that before, but you've got no money and nowhere to go." And that was the day she moved permanently into the maid's quarters at Eddie's house. And Eddie said the guy came over knocking on the door a couple times looking for her. At first, he was very pissed off. Then a few days later, he came back with his tail between his legs. And still, his wife wouldn't talk to him unless Eddie's girlfriend was present. Just in case, you know. Then, a couple days later, he came and was crying, begging her to come back. Probably because he needed his house cleaned and he needed some food on the table, she said. She repeated the only way she'd go back is if he had that family confessional powwow. In the meantime, she wants to get her 14-year-old daughter far away from this guy. Let me just say that I don't know what you're thinking, but I'd never take a 14-year-old girl into my house as a cleaning lady, and you shouldn't either, so don't get any ideas. However, I gotta tell you, it's very common down here for middle-class and upper-middle-class Latin families to have very young girls, 12, 13, and 14, as their live-in maids. And these girls are always uneducated, indigenous types. Many can't read and write, or barely can. They're mostly from way out in the boonies, and sort of like indentured slaves. In fact, a couple of times I visited the family of a high-level military guy, his wife and his kids at home and all that, and he had two of these young 14-year-old girls as his maids. When I asked him where they came from, he said when he was stationed at an airfield way out in the boonies, all the officers had little houses on the base, and they had their cleaning ladies, of course, and a lot of the mothers would offer up their daughters to work at these guys' houses in the city. As cleaning ladies, of course, nothing more. And he said that's the best way to get a very loyal, hardworking cleaning lady or maid, getting them really young, pretty much off the farm. That way, they've got no bad habits. Now, in no way am I recommending this for gringos and expats. I'm just giving you a little taste of Latin sociology and the rigidness of the class system. And then you might ask, a girl in a situation like that, how much does she get paid? Well, of course, she gets room and board and about $3 a day. From what I can see, they're glad to get it because there's just no work at all way out in the boonies. So anyway, I really think it's good to know about these things. Know how society works down here. And by the way, about the bruja in every neighborhood. Now, she doesn't look like a witch. She just looks like a regular workaday lady living in a rundown neighborhood in a tiny house with a laminate roof. Just like everybody else in the neighborhood, and she's got kids and sometimes a husband. And when you ask Latin folks, how'd she get that job? They'll say she was born with a don, D-O-N, which in Spanish means a kind of mystical gift. So, generally, mothers pass that kind of thing down to daughters. And to Latins, there's nothing really strange or unusual about it. Now, the most common reason Latin women go to brujas, and it's almost always Latin women. Number one, to regain a love interest that's strayed. Number two, to fix money problems. And number three, to cure physical ills the doctors can't. The question is, are these brujas effective? Well, it beats Obamacare. So then you might ask, in these heavily Catholic and Christian countries, don't the priests and pastors raise a fuss about that? Well, sure, they know about the popularity of the neighborhood brujas. They just kind of tolerate it. Very weird, huh? Okay, now, before we finish up today, I'd like to give you a little update on some behind-the-scenes stuff. Now, you may or may not know, I launched what's called the Flag Wisdom Flagonomics course last week, and it went like gangbusters. I wanted to keep the class really small, so I took it offline, off sale on Tuesday. Now, a lot of people didn't believe we were going to close it out so fast. So, we had a lot of people trying to get in on it at the last minute. Sorry you didn't get in, but we did say it was going to be for a very, very limited time only. Now, that said, we've had some issues with a few of the credit cards that never went through. In fact, some people actually purchased the course in two places. I guess they really wanted to make sure they got a seat. So, with all that and a couple of small mix-ups, we have a few more places available. To make it fair, we'll be opening the doors again on Monday to give people who missed out on it and those who had credit card screw-ups one more chance. Now, my first Flagonomics class with live Q&A starts on Friday, June 5th, so we need to get everyone up to speed before this class on Friday. So, if all goes as planned, we'll be doing a webinar on Monday at 12 noon Eastern to answer any further questions about Flag Wisdom Flagonomics. We'll open up the doors one last time right afterward. So, watch for an email shortly with all the details. And by the way, only those listeners who signed up at the Expat Wisdom website, you're the only ones who will get the email, and you're the only ones who know about the course. It's my very own step-by-step plan on how to internationalize yourself, make yourself Big Brother bulletproof, how to become a low-profile expat just like me. And of course, you know nothing about this event if you haven't signed up at expatwisdom.com. As of today, that's the only way you're going to find out about my brand new 6-hour interactive course. Oh, and don't forget about my July 2015 Expat Wisdom Seminar in Central America. Go to expatwisdom.com, click on the seminar link, and find out all about that, too. It's about a month and a half away, so you still have plenty of time to make arrangements. So, again, go to expatwisdom.com and click on the Latin seminar link.
South of the border, down Mexico way.
You've been listening to the Expat Files, living in Latin America, coming to you twice a week from somewhere south of the border. Email me, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And don't forget to check out expatwisdom.com to sign up for your free reports on Latin America. See you next time. Nos vemos. She was a picture in old style.